Shanti. Good evening and welcome to everyone this evening. Jayanti Ben has given us time, some of her precious time, to chit-chat with us. So we really appreciate that, and also welcome to everyone on webcast this evening. And I was remembering Daddy in Madhuban because usually since 2007 Daddy was always in Madhuban in December, and in the run-up to 31st December she would be drilling in everyone, finish something in the year, finish your weakness, finish something. And these last few days of 2022, I'm hoping that this evening will support in not only just opening up a vision of something beautiful for 23, but also reveal something about what we need to finish in 2022 as well. So we're going to have a bit of an interview with you and then open it up to the floor for questions towards the end, okay? So if you have any questions during the course of it, just make a note of it, and there'll be time to ask as well. So Jayanti Ben, there's a theme we'd like to take up, and the theme is around respect, harmony, and unity. And especially starting on the subject of respect, Baba had once said, you become a ruler based on your self-respect, and you become worthy of worship based on how much regard you give to others. Now, on a ground level, what we understand to be self-respect is different to how Baba sees us and what's Baba's definition of self-respect. So I'd like you just to talk a little bit on Baba's definition of self-respect.
Om Shanti. It's okay?
Yeah.
If you think about every single one of Avyakt Muralis that you've read or heard, the first passage of the Murali is always, always that in which Baba is reminding us of who we are and what is our stage of self-respect. And so the way Baba is seeing us, just think about all the things that Baba said just in last week's Murali. The holiest and the highest, and every single other Murali. And so really, when Baba's looking at us, Baba's seeing that which is the highest within us. And we don't always see that in ourselves, because we see our current state. Baba sees us through the circle of time. And this particular Murali was classic, Baba reminding us, well, where were we when we were in Paramdham? There were billions of other souls, but we were the ones who were closest to God. Mm-hmm. And then the deity stage, Baba took us through the whole cycle. Mm-hmm. And so am I aware that this is who I am? And I think most of us are not aware of that. And there are reasons why we don't manage to maintain our stage of self-respect. Shall I get into that now, or shall I stop?
No, go ahead. Keep going. Yeah.
I think the main reason why there's this discrepancy between what Baba is saying to us and what we actually feel for our own selves, and that discrepancy is because there's a situation where probably I know I haven't been following the code of conduct that Baba wants me to the degree that Baba would like, and that I would like even for myself. And so, because my inner conscience, nothing to do with anybody outside at all, but my inner conscience is reminding me that I haven't yet achieved that stage that I would like to. And so I'm not able to maintain that stage of self-love or self-respect to the degree that Baba would like, that I would like. And so I see both things as very deeply connected.
Now, where does the subject of needs fit in? Because on at a human level, we have needs. Okay, I'm talking about physical needs, and Baba provides that for us. And we have our own context, but there are needs. Somebody needs respect, somebody needs attention, somebody needs something. And I think as human beings, sometimes we have more neediness than self-respect. And I suppose when those needs are not met at the level of respect or attention, it can create competitiveness, jealousies, comparisons, tension. What's this whole thing of discerning our needs, discerning what I need, and yet maintaining my self-respect?
One of the most beautiful lessons that I always go back to is the subject of soul. And the lesson of the soul, you know, when Baba said, I think it was yesterday, Baba talking about the wonder of nature and the soul and the amazing, incredible situation where this tiny point of light has everything within itself. I'm very aware that when I come to that real realization of who I am as a soul and the role that I've got recorded within me, then I also know that all the needs that I have can be fulfilled by my connection with Baba. And as Brahmins, in Lokic life, I don't know many people who have true self-respect. Many have ego, and many have inferiority complexes, but there might be a handful that I've met who've really had that genuine humility, but self-respect. Because when there's self-respect, there is great humility. And without humility, you won't see that stage of self-respect. So for Brahmins, I feel that there's something missing, both in terms of remembering who we are, but also in terms of connecting with Baba. And because we're not connecting with Baba, we're not able to feel that contentment within the self, and that state in which our needs are met from within. And that's when we become needy in terms of what we can get from outside. And so I feel that the real issue here is to be able to be in touch with myself and not just know what my needs are, but to know that my needs can actually only be met by Baba. It's not possible for a human being to give me what I need at the end of Kali Yuga.
Do you think somehow service has become a compensation for needs?
Service becomes not just a compensation, but it becomes a way to avoid looking inside and seeing what's really going on. A little bit different from what you've just said. But I think that service is escapism very often. It becomes a reason for me to say, well, I'm busy. And it's true, I am busy. That's not a lie. But I've made myself busy so that I don't give myself time. And where Daddy, amazing example for all of us. And where Daddy would say that 80% of my time is going inside and only 20% of my time is outside. And yet she'd be occupied through the whole day. But the 80% was the checking, the changing, the filling, the strengthening. And then she would also say that it's because I do this that all of you are willing to listen to me for the other 20%. And if I didn't do this, you people wouldn't be sitting here listening to me.
She's right. Gentlemen, you know, it strikes me, I mean, you've grown up in the Yajna, you've grown up with Baba, and it's amazing that in your new role and the respect that Baba and the Daddies have had for you. Do you have any stories? I mean, you've witnessed the respect and regard between them. You've witnessed the respect about that, but for yourself personally, when have there been a moment in your Brahmin journey when you really felt humbled by the respect that you were given by Baba or the Daddies?
When Daddy would say to me right from 1969 you have to go to London and you have to do something. It was scary, but it was also very humbling to see her trust. And then when she must have taken it to Dari Gulzar, but whatever next happened, but then Baba started to say, you have to go to London, there's service to be done there. And I thought to myself, you know, there's all these other powerful Maharathis, and how come Baba's not sending any of them? And of course Baba knew that you need a place to go and stay, and these wonderful Maharathis could have gone and stayed for a week, a month, but there wouldn't have been a proper base. And so it's very interesting. And at one point Baba said to me, do you think you know more than Baba does? Because I was arguing with Baba about not coming to London. And do you think you know?
So it's really taken
that
courage.
That was really, really very humbling.
Well, it's really taken courage to play your part, because at that point you didn't know what your part, how your part would unfold. But Baba could see that.
That was the early period, 1969. And then when Baba said this to me, that was 1984. And that was when I was still struggling to stay in London and face all the challenges that at that time London was providing for me, and lots of different things going on. And yet my heart was saying, if I'd be in India now, I look back and I think, well, that was really stupid, because it was my sanskars, it wasn't India or London. And at that time, if I had stayed in India, at some point those same things would have come up in India. But Baba sent me back again and again. So that was in actually 85. 84 I was arguing with Adi Prakash Mani, then 85 I found myself sat in front of Baba and was able to have a detailed conversation. And then when Baba said, who knows better, then I agreed, okay, I'm not going to think about anything else, I'm just going to accept that this is what Baba wants me to do. And it was incredible, because that was the preparation then for the international projects. And if I'd still been fluctuating inside, certainly there wouldn't have been any role for me to carry on with that. But it was because that got settled finally after a long time that then I could say, yes, I can stay, this is where I'm supposed to be, Baba's put me here. And then the different, very different era in the 80s, from 86, a million minutes, and then global cooperation, then living values, things just moved on very fast after that.
So the humbling part of it was actually bowing to Baba and saying, yeah, okay, you know better.
Finally.
Finally, even though you had a little tug and tussle before that. You know, Baba has... I want to weave in the subject of love, because there's this one statement I've just always loved from Baba's Murli, and he said, to give respect means to sow a seed of love from the heart in the hearts of others. And I feel like when I look at the exchange between the daddies, they're just sowing seeds of love, and each one is so different, and yet their engagement with each other is filled with so much respect. Now, I want you to just unpack this whole subject of being loving and the effort in your journey of from maybe giving love or having love to becoming loving.
I think that the first step is to be able to have respect for the self, the self-esteem we spoke about earlier, and from there you can start loving the self, and then you can truly be in a very genuine way loving. I'm seeing the difference between just giving people time and attention, and it's of course important, but if you think about say, for example, Dadi Prakash Mani, she didn't give a huge amount of time to individuals, but the few minutes that she did give were very precious and they were genuinely very loving. Dadi Janki's role was very different. I don't know about her role in India to the same extent, but certainly here she would give a huge amount of time and attention to people. And because it was a very pioneering role here, the only person who had taken Raj Yoga teachings who wasn't from Bharat was Stefan. But he had love for India and Indology and had spent a year in India before he actually then started Raj Yoga. So there was quite a bit of Indian influence there. But there was nobody else who was a Brahmin from any other culture. And Dadi comes along and suddenly there's all these people from a different cultural, different racial, different religious background, and that he's nurturing them. And at that moment, she wouldn't have said, I'm training teachers to serve the world. She wouldn't have been able to put it in that conscious way. But her thought was, what Baba has given me, I want to give to others. Mm. And so her love was expressed in that way, the time she gave and the attention she gave and the nurture she gave. And then it wasn't just... In fact, the Bharatvasi service started a bit later. At first, it was really the Westerners. There'd be a class of 22 Westerners and 5 Bharatvasis, literally. Mm. 74, 75, 76, around then. Then, a bit later, the Bharatvasis also started to come, and those who know Dadi know how much time and attention and love that he gave to each and every single one, certainly of those who are sitting in this part of the room. I'm not seeing so many of the early day brothers. And yes, that he did give those with Paresh maybe. And I know that Rajiv got a lot of love and attention also. But really early days like the 70s and the 80s, it was a whole different scenario. And the people who came to Baba at that time, they had so much time with Dadi. Mm. Like, you know, it would be hours. Mm. Catherine will remember those days. We'd sit with Dadi, and it was pressing a button, and there'd be stories and stories and stories, 2 hours, 3 hours. And by then it was a mixed gathering. So, different ways of expressing love. Mm. But Dadi Prakash Mani, and she just give you drishti, and you'd feel you'll melt, and you'd feel that love, and that was it. And Dadi Janki, yes, powerful drishti. Didi's drishti was very powerful. Didi Manmohini, and people still remember that. I remember that to this day. And yes, the love was there, and of course it was very powerful love, but very different. So I see that time, energy, respect, attention, drishti, all these are expressions of being loving. And these souls had so much within themselves that they were able just simply to give and give and give. And I think that we also at this moment, the more we are able to take from Baba and fill ourselves, the more we can be instruments to give.
Is it important to understand how we receive love and how we give love?
It's important to appreciate how much each of us has received. Mm. And yes, we've received respect from the Dadis, we've received love, and also many of us directly from Avyakt Bap Dada. The drishti, you know, even in the days that... personal meetings. How many of you here sitting here have had personal meetings with Baba? You see, it's a good number. And if you had the morning class here, you'd find even more. So it's limitless how much we've had from Baba. So, and also the Dadis. But I think just keeping that alive in your heart and appreciating that then makes you aware of your fortune and how you need to give a return of that today.
Now, in the early days, there was the luxury of time. That luxury is being drastically reduced now. There was the luxury of people's availability. That's being reduced now, especially for someone like you in your particular role. So what have you found? What are you doing to stay loving, no matter all these restrictions and, you know, things getting tighter and narrower on the journey?
I'm trying to see if what would normally take half an hour can be done in 10 minutes. it's a constant awareness I have that can I do what I used to do in this amount of time now in this amount of time.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And are you succeeding in this?
Well, I must be because I'm staying on top of it.
Wow.
If I wasn't able to do that, I wouldn't be able to.
So would we call your staying loving is staying essenceful in things, staying accurate?
Well, hopefully.
Thank you. One of the things I think you're in a position, you know, when we talk about loving, and Baba has created a context and a family that allows us to escalate our issues. He liberates us. He says to us, look, if you have a problem with someone, if something goes wrong, you just tell your teacher and then forget about it. And then that one tells their senior and they forget about it. And then that one tells daddy and then they forget about it. Now, you've climbed that ladder, right? But you're now at a point where the buck stops with you. Because there is no one, you know, there isn't Bap Dada there that you can go to Bap Dada and ask advice, and there isn't daddy there. So now,
a little bit different, in a sense that daddy was available for all of us, and all the daddies were available, and so everybody could go to a daddy. It wasn't necessarily step by step by step by step. I know many here who have gone to Daddy Kumarka directly, who've gone to Daddy Gulzar directly, including yourself. So I think all of us now have that awareness that there isn't a daddy to go to. And, you know, this title.
But there is the Sister Jenti to go to. How does that make you feel?
Uncomfortable. Because I do see that there's a big, big difference between the role of Baba, Mama, the daddies, and when Baba left, Shiv Baba said, there is no one who can replace Baba. When Didi left, Daddy Kumarka was asked, are you going to play the role of Didi and Daddy? She said, no. Didi's role was Didi's role. So it set a very good precedent for me. When Daddy Janki left, many people said to me, are you also going to play Daddy Janki's role? I said, no, Daddy is Daddy. Mm. And so, no, you can't compare in that way. Mm-hmm. It's a very different world, a very different situation. And the amount of sustenance everybody here has had, even new ones, fairly new ones, but huge amounts. So you can't just say, well, you're the only one who was able to take that sustenance, but everybody here has had that. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's everybody's responsibility to deal with situations as they happen and move up.
Mm. Well, I think that you're revealing your style in the sense that, you know, you're pushing faith down, saying you can do it too. It's not just me, because I remember a scene when...
It is the reality.
It is, because I remember a scene when Ramesh Bhai came to Daddy Jenki, and it was just after Daddy Ji's funeral. And Ramesh Bhai said to Daddy, you have to give the love that Daddy Ji gave. And Daddy Jenki retorted straight back and said, what about you? You have to give that love too. But, you know, Jenti Ben, in this whole scenario, I do feel like drama is a balancing act. You know, whatever drama is accurate. So there is it's no coincidence you are where you are today, right? And I also feel that for myself, that when things happen in the drama, apart from all the external things, it's happening because it's drawing something out of me to help me come back to bring balance. So I suppose I'm just curious, as you've, drama's invited you to step into this new role, there's a different, well, more expansion and attention in India, what do you feel is leveling out for you inside in this whole thing? What's coming into balance?
What I'm seeing is that my time is more and more now with family rather than thinking about external service.
Mm.
And when I used to see the dadis, I would see that the dadis would give 90% of their time for family and 10% would be for service out there. And in those days, what I was doing was maybe 70% outside and 30% inside. And today I'm seeing that more and more it's to be with the family and to support the family on all levels rather than just lectures out there.
Mm. So is that influencing your priorities and decision making as well?
It is, in the sense of my commitment of time and attention and energy.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
I'm just looking at what's happened this year over the last 10 days, and I think I've attended practically, probably every, actually, not just practically, I've attended every single Christmas gathering we've had in the UK, which is great.
That's an achievement.
But I don't think I would have been able to do that 5 years ago. I'd have thought, well, daddy's going to be there, so that's fine, let daddy get on with it, and I'd do something else. But I just see the time with the family is what drama's putting in front of me,
and
I'm happy to respond to that.
And what's being with the family bringing out of you?
More love, more appreciation, and at the moment I'm just seeing huge amount of time and energy that the family has put in to creating that family feeling and atmosphere and harmony and joy that everybody's been enjoying over this Christmas period.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Now, on the subject of family and harmony, you know, Baba, and I'm going to quote Baba on this, unity means having harmony in nature and sanskars. Even if there isn't harmony between the nature and sanskars of some, try and bring them into harmony. This is unity. A gathering by itself is not unity. Serviceable instrument souls cannot become instruments for unlimited service without these two things. Harmonize the steps and harmonize oneself in the dance of sanskars. Now, in connection with that, being human means that, you referred to this a bit earlier, that we all experience inside some kind of internal dissonance, you know, about where we should be, where we are at now, or perhaps cultural dissonances. You know, the Western culture, the Eastern culture, preferences. And, you know, someone described as opposing forces inside. And I was quite touched in the Sakar Murali a few days ago when Baba said, you know, don't come into conflict inside yourself. And, of course, on your journey, you have been exposed to an incredible variety, you know, across continents, people, cultures. And that would have triggered, revealed dissonance in you. And I'm wondering if you can give us an example of it. Of course, we don't want names and, you know, too much of that, but some practical example of the type of dissonance you've met and how you handle this aspect of dissonance inside you and keeping yourself free from subtle conflict inside yourself.
The challenges that I faced when I came back from India to stay at home, and then that became the transition to the center. It was really this, the internal conflict that I was going through had to get sorted out. And so, as I say, it took a long time till I finally accepted that, yes, this is my role to be here, and so on. And it's a fact that while there is that inner struggle that goes on, you want to be there, but you're here. And you're not settling things here because you think things will be better there, which is an illusion. But what happens in that situation is that because there isn't that total harmonizing within yourself between your feelings and your conscience. Conscience is saying, listen to Baba, and feelings are saying, so that's the thing. So because of this particular situation, I can see that it's good that it was Daddy that was responsible, because there's no way that I could have carried responsibility in that condition. It was only when that dissonance finished that then I was able to take more responsibility. So I do see that that is absolutely a factor. Mm. And so I see that for everyone, whatever it is that's not quite settled inside, that is what is holding back the soul, both in terms of spiritual progress, but also in terms of being an instrument in service.
Mm.
And of course, while there is this conflict, never mind dissonance, but conflict inside, it also means that you're never able to, you know, Baba's comment about when you're content inside, then you can be content with others out there, and they can be content with you.
Mm.
And when there's discontent, you don't realize it, the discontent with others, and also they're then discontent with you also, but that discontent with others is actually because you haven't sorted out things within yourself. It takes a long time for that penny to drop.
Mm.
And to really then say, no, it isn't them. It's something I have to sort out inside my own self. It takes a long time.
Mm.
And, you know, if you think about the two topics that Baba takes up in the Avyakt Muralis again and again, one is contentment and the other is purity.
Mm.
It's these two topics. And so that purity, that total state of cleanliness where there isn't any tug of war anymore, but also connected with that then, the cleaner I am inside, the more comfortable I am with myself, and there is that state of contentment.
Mm.
Then when I'm starting from that state, then there can be contentment with others and that state of harmony with others too.
Mm.
Otherwise it's never going to happen.
Mm.
Because today is this one, tomorrow is that one, it will be somebody.
And the stories continue. I mean, what does it take to get to that point, to actually face, look at that as a mirror, that the situation I'm in is mirroring something else? Do you have to suffer a lot till you get to that point?
I don't know that it's just the suffering. I think it's the desire to actually understand what Baba's saying and to do what Baba wants me to do. I think that motivation inside, more than just suffering, because sometimes people suffer and there's more suffering and more suffering and more suffering, but then it's just a state of hopelessness. It's not that it's a motivation then to bring about change, then takes you the other way. Well, I'm never going to manage this, so what's the point?
So I like this thread. It starts with the question that, do I want to be what Baba wants me to be? Reconciling that hope that Baba has in with me, and do I want to live up to that?
Mm.
And secondly, finishing that sense of conflict and dissonance, settling inside. And then thirdly, that gives rise to taking on more responsibility in service.
You know, you don't ask for responsibility. It comes your way. And if you're capable of fulfilling that, more comes your way.
Mm.
So it's not even a thought that, well, I'd like to be more responsible.
Mm.
It happens. But it happens when you're ready for it. And if today I find myself managing this, then automatically there'll be more to manage. But if today there's this little pot and I'm not even keeping that pot in the place where it should be, I'm keeping it here instead of here. It's very little things. But that sense of responsibility and accuracy, and again, it's not something that you say, well, I want responsibility. But, okay, I've been given this responsibility. To what extent am I fulfilling it in the way that's needed? Instead of superficially, instead of passing it on to somebody else, instead of saying, well, somebody else can do it, but okay, it's come to me, can I do it properly? And then there'll be more and more and more.
I'm just going to divert a bit here. I want to move into internal conflict to external. And one of the things, you, in your position globally as an emissary of peace, also in the family, you've also been the target of a lot of character defamation. You've also had to receive...
This was one of the big reasons why, until 84, 85, I really wasn't interested in staying in London, because I felt I was being targeted a lot.
If you don't mind, I'd like to explore your journey and your relationship with this a bit, because this is, it's tough. I've seen it from a locket, but you know, people are unhappy and they leave and they need a scapegoat. You and a few other senior names attached to it. Now, over the years, you know, what is your relationship with being insulted and defamed? How has that changed? I mean, I know Baba talks about, you know, when he says, even those who give regard, even consider those who defame them to be their friends and belonging. Like, how has that journey evolved for you? Because, you know, we're so sensitive to being insulted and defamed, or even if somebody points out a weakness of ours. How have you desensitized yourself to all that?
I'm just looking back on my journey and asking myself, the big shift, as I say, happened when Baba said, Baba's put you here for good reason. And so I think from that moment on, I just accepted that whatever was coming my way, Baba put me here. And so whatever others may think, it's really a secondary thing. I have to be comfortable being here. And if it means rising above those things that are being said and checking myself, to what extent is that true? But Baba's put me here and this is where I have to stay. It was that sort of feeling, and then that gave me the inner capacity to be able to say, okay, that is what it is, but I have to carry on.
You're very brave. I mean, I think you're right in accepting and being humble enough to say, Baba has put me here, because Baba did put you here. Baba put his hand on your head and he did say that, child, whatever decision you make, Baba will, you know, I think I'm paraphrasing, but you have to correct if you can finish the tail end of it. Yes, Baba will put it right. And so in many ways, Baba has put that authority on your head. And I think for me, just observing your journey over the years and seeing you accept that with grace, because it's not easy, especially when you're a target, you know, and being compared with or competed with, etc., etc., and especially handling jealousy. And I want to know from you, and I'm sure you've had discussions with the daddies about this and whatever, how have you handled jealousy?
I'll tell you a story, very early days. So this would have been before 83, because it was Didi. And it would have been maybe the end of the 70s or 81. And I used to translate for Baba through the night. And there was one other individual, maybe others that I don't know of, but certainly one, who went to Didi and said, well, why should it be this one? I can do that. And I didn't know that this had happened, but Didi called me. And she said, you have so many other things that you can be doing. Is it possible for you to give this role to somebody else? And I said, yes, why not? And then Lily told me who it was, and it was okay. Lily made me aware at that time that if there's a role that you're playing, but somebody else wants it, it's okay. You're never going to be left with nothing to do. Mm. There'll always be plenty of things for you to do. And so if that's what they have their eye on, don't bother with it, you know. And in this case, it was translation for Baba. And it was a very beautiful experience to be doing that, because, you know, you saw how Baba was dealing with every individual. And sometimes Baba would make them laugh, sometimes Baba would make them become very deeply serious and introvert. It was just an amazing experience. But at that moment, Didi's point, you know, it's like if you're eating something and somebody has their eye on it and you carry on eating it, it's going to give you a stomachache. It really is. I'm sure you've seen it happen. It's vibrations, it's energy. And so you really don't want to eat it anymore. So this was a beautiful experience that I treasured. But I knew that if somebody wanted it and Didi is asking me to step away from it, I had to say yes.
Wow. Is this kind of... I know I've watched you bow a lot in many situations. Is this the foundation of bowing? Because Baba talks about harmony and harmani and like...
There's... Baba has said it, but I also remember Daddy telling me in a particular situation. What Baba has said to me personally is, service is your shadow. Your shadow will always follow you wherever you go. And so wherever you go, there'll be service to be done. And Daddy Janki said to me something that was a little bit similar, but a little bit different. She said to me, because I was wanting to be in a little gathering that the Daddies were having. So this would have been in the days that Daddy was living in that tiny little room behind the history hall, where later Daddy Ratan Moini started to stay. And my amazing fortune at that time, I don't know who decided, Didi decided, Daddy decided or how, but I was in that room with Daddy. And Daddy said to me, I'm going to be using this room for the next few hours and you find other place for yourself. Basically, she didn't want me to be there, which was fine. That wasn't the issue. And then I saw that there's this group of daddies sitting there. They didn't even have chairs in those days in our rooms. And that was such a tiny little room. It was just two beds. And so three daddies sitting on this bed, three daddies sitting on this bed. And they're having what was quite visibly a very intense discussion. And my heart wanted to know what it was they were discussing. And that finished and they left. And then later on, Daddy said to me, do you want to know what we were talking about? I said, Daddy, how did you know? And Daddy said, went just like that. And then she said to me, whatever is your right will always come to you. Mm. Nobody can take away what is rightfully yours. Mm. And so you never have to think, well, can I have this? Can I have that? Whatever is your right is going to come to you. Mm. And so those two things from Baba and from Daddy, they've been very valuable for me.
Mm.
And so I know that really what is my right is going to come. Mm. No more, no less.
Mm. So there's no artificial bowing down or anything. It's just a deep understanding of the law of karma, actually. What is in your fortune and what is in your right will come to you. On this note, One of the things, and I think it's just one dharana connected to this, is words and tone of voice. And I know when Baba talks about incorporeal, egoless and viceless, he says, you know, incorporeal in thoughts, egoless in words, and viceless in actions. And I know how much in the whole thing of creating harmony in sanskars, words and tone of voice play such a big role. And I've always admired how cool you stay in your tone of voice. I mean, of course, everybody, we all have our moments of frustration, but that's a separate thing in terms of personal things. But generally speaking, and I've watched you in some pretty tough situations, you have a consistent tone of voice that's cool and that's calm and that's collected. And I'll freak out sometimes, you know, if I think about my tone of voice, where it becomes a bit arrogant. What is the secret behind this? What helped you stabilize your tone of voice?
I realized that if I'm soul conscious, my tone of voice is different to when I'm not soul conscious. And I think maybe a lesson I learned, this would have been around the end of the 70s, and I was still doing travel. And I say still because then after me, Wadi came on the scene. Wadi did travel, then Maureen did travel, then Naina did travel. So it's been a whole legacy of different people. But I was still handling travel. And by then, already we had over 100 people. And today, everybody is very independent. You just book online and do what you want. But in those days, we literally went as big groups. And manager in the office, and at that time they were in Bond Street around there. This manager had given us a block of seats in December, and it was at normal rates. So this would have been really before they jacked up prices around Christmas time, so at that time. And this man kept me waiting. Quite a long time, and it had been difficult to pin him down because I tried. And what they had done, he had done, was to say that we are not able to give you these dates at this price. If you're willing to pay this price, then you can have those dates. And it was quite a considerable jack up of the price. And I know that people who were coming to us, nobody was rich in that sense. They were working people. And I know that to change dates at work, holiday time, was difficult. And I know to get suddenly a few £100 more was difficult. And so the struggle was to make that man realize that, you know, we had a commitment. They had a commitment. We had a commitment. And nothing was happening on the phone. So I said, I need to come and see you. And through that period, as I was waiting, I was thinking, is it because I'm in a female body and he thinks he can get away with it? I was absolutely sure that if he'd been dealing with a man, it wouldn't have taken that amount of time to even get an appointment. I was convinced of that. And so then the question was, do I have to shout at him to prove that I can shout? And again, it must have been a conversation, some in here, some with Baba, and the thought came that, well, if I'm going to shout, I'm losing my dignity, and I don't want to do that. And do I want him to shout back at me? And I certainly didn't want that. And then I realized that I just had to keep Baba with me. I just had to be very soul conscious and just explain to him. Finally, after about 45 minutes, he decided he would see me. But that was great because it gave me that opportunity to prepare myself and what I was going to say. So I told him that people weren't going on holiday. They weren't going on a shopping trip. They were going on a pilgrimage. And I put it in that language that this was something sacred for them, which it is. And in those days, they weren't going to go on sightseeing trips here and there. They were going to go to Madhuban, come straight back. No relatives, no nothing. It was just Madhuban. And I knew that and soul consciousness, if I kept the tone of my voice very calm, very cool, there was more likelihood that he would listen.
Mm.
And at the end of that meeting, we got our tickets, we got our seats, same price. And that was a little experiment that proved to me that you can, through soul consciousness, change somebody else's attitude.
Mm.
Through soul consciousness and Baba, you can keep your voice, whatever had been going on before, but you can keep your voice very calm. And in a very conscious way, that little experiment helped me for the 80s when Rick and Sandy were with me. And Daddy had sent us off on this grand tour of the USA. It was visiting every center that existed in the USA at that time. This is around 84. And we started from New York, and now we were in the Midwest, and it was San Antonio, and it's Texas. And I hadn't thought about any of this beforehand, but because I was meeting Brahmins, lectures where people were interested would come. And then they said that there was this radio program that I'd been asked to do the interview. And so I turn up there, and Rick and Sandy are with me, and this man, a big guy, and then I realize that there's something wrong with his leg, and so he actually was handicapped. And so that's just by the way I noticed. But the first few minutes it was just, you know, where are you from, da-da-da-da. And he asked Rick and Sandy not to sit in the booth where we were, in the studio, but outside where they could hear it on the speakers. And his first question was quite normal. Second, two, three questions, it was fine. And then he started getting very insulting. And I've forgotten the detail of the sequence, but at one time he was calling, well, you've come to teach us stuff from things like the Gita, which I consider to be like dishwater. And as soon as he started on that track, soul consciousness, Baba, stay very cool. And I kept the tone of my voice absolutely calm and stable. And after about 10-15 minutes of this, then he said, "Sister, you think you've had it tough? Well, now I'm going to throw you to the crocodiles." And I didn't know what he meant. And then he explained. He said, "I'm going to open up the channels so that people out there can ask you whatever they wish to ask." And he was describing, he was inviting the crocodiles by that statement. And it was real nasty questions.
Wow.
But I just stayed calm and positioned whatever I wanted to position. And that came at the end. And I was still smiling. Came out, and Rick and Sandy were aghast. Absolutely aghast. And they said, "We thought you weren't going to come out from there alive."
Oh, God.
We got to the center, and they said that somehow the radio station had managed it so that they would ask them to speak whatever question they had before they put you through. And a few of them had been trying, but all the lines were blocked. And so they were obviously very aware of which questions were going to be difficult, and they put those through. But the interesting thing, then, that day we left, or the next morning early, we left San Antonio, going to the next place. And when we got there, no mobile phones in those days, we got there, and Hansa, Dr. Hansa, she phoned me and said, "I listened to the same show today," and it was the morning show, and people were now flooding the man with calls. Why were you so nasty to that sweet person? And he was saying to them, for entertainment, all of you got so excited and it was to entertain all of you. I don't really believe the things I was saying, but I wanted to entertain you.
Wow.
But of course, it wasn't true. Then I realized we were in the Bible thumping belt.
So you had a lot of practice in this field. So, you know, what you see is a perfect looking Sister Jayanti. She's had to work hard behind the scenes to develop this. Wow. I don't think I've ever heard that story before. Has anybody else heard that story? No. Wow. So, I mean, gentlemen, time is running. I could stay here all night with you.
No, please, we'll finish in three minutes.
But I just want to open it up to the floor. Is that anyone here who's burning to ask a question? So the question for Jayanti Ben is how much of your time do you practice spinning the cycle, emerging your deity form, angelic form? How do you do that?
Not as much as I'd like to, but the time that I get to practice all this is morning times, and then when I find myself alone doing work that I need to do and there's space to do that, then during that period it'll come back. But what I also enjoy very much is, as Baba's, when I'm reading the Murali, then whatever Baba is speaking about, I like to experiment with it at that time and experience it. That becomes a very lovely feeling. So that's a good time. So reading Murali on my own is one of my best experiences.
Do you consciously meet your deity form?
It's not an image that I emerge. It's the qualities, the feelings.
So the question here is, in the CEO world, we ask them, in your role, what keeps you up at night? So Sister Jayanti, in your new role as the additional administrative head, what's keeping you up at night? Are there things that are more that are keeping you up?
So far, it's been different situations in Madhuban. Because now there you do see that there is a big missing factor. In the sense that one or another dadi was always there. And that's not so anymore. And so certainly since 2020, I've been aware of situations that really need to be tackled, and there isn't somebody right there to tackle them. And when a number of us are there together, that makes a big difference. But this is why I'm very aware that I need to spend more time in Bharat.
Thank you. Thank you. And one last question had come in from someone else just before I arrived. What advice would you give to a 25-year-old Sister Jayanti? You have to look at your 25 years old. What advice would you give that 25-year-old?
Don't take life seriously. Take it lightly.
Okay, good. Thank you, Jayanti Ben. I think it's been a very rich session, and I think just you sharing and opening the window to your dharana
has been helping. Thank you, Gopi Ben, for the insightful questions you asked.
I enjoyed it. Om Shanti, and Happy New Year to everybody. Okay, so we'll just have some meditation, and then Jayanti Ben will give Toli. So please stay for Toli and blessings.